Hello, sacred beings. Welcome to Sacred Sister Podcast. Join us as we normalize the magic and sacralize the mundane.
Expanding consciousness and deepening awareness to support you in leading a life full of healing, meaning, and magic.
I'm your host, Britt Lynn, energetic cartographer and personal transformation coach.
I'm your host, Tana Lina, a certified astrologer, rebirth coach, and sorceress.
If you're brand new here, welcome, beloved. We are so grateful, so happy to have you here. If you're a seasoned sacred being, welcome back. Thank you so much for your support, for your listenership, and we look forward to seeing you in the show.
Let's dive in.
Oh my goodness. Hello, sacred beings, and welcome to another episode of Sacred Sister Podcast. My heart is pounding out of my chest right now. I'm so excited for the episode that we're bringing to you, for the guests that we're featuring today. This beautiful musical artist has been a profound guide on my own spiritual awakening path, and we're just so riveted to invite you on to Sacred Sister Podcast. Welcome, Marja Stark.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful to be here with you and connect with you and be and share today with this beautiful community. Thanks for having me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you so much. I have to say, for myself, for Hannah, for my niece, Hannah, I don't know if your daughter Emma has gotten into Marja Stark's music. I'm sure she has. You are just playing.
My husband too. We're all singing it.
Totally. My husband Curtis is in love with the Prosperity Codex song as well.
Nice.
You are playing through our homes all the time. Your music is so profound.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the pieces we're going to get into a ton of conversations on, really diving deep into this beautiful embodiment that you hold within priestesshood and cycles of initiation. I have some questions that I want to ask you about your dream world, because it seems that this is a recurring theme in your music and lyrics as well. And I'd love to gain more insight on that. Mm. And then weaving as the vocal channel as well, not only like self-informing yourself by what wants to come through you, but then also looking at that vocal channel as the self-expressive tool as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm really excited to get into these pieces of conversation. And for right now, we'd love to invite you to offer some of your medicine to ground down the Sacred Sister Podcast audience.
Awesome. I think we'll go in with the voice. Like you said, one of my passions is connecting to the voice as an anchor into the body. And so we can start with just taking a few deep breaths in together. I'm just feeling with the scanning, doing like an inner vision scan of the whole body from the top of the crown down through the river of light, the central channel that connects the whole core of our body, and just feeling that scan, seeing if with our inner eye we can locate ourselves in this beautiful vessel that we inhabit with our spirit walking through the world, encountering all of the things. And just finding yourself bringing some attention and intention to the center of your heart, that seat where the soul can abide. And just from a gentle place of allowance, I invite us all to take a deep breath in and relax on a gentle hum. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a few hums here, and I'd love to, this is a practice to really allow the sound to bring a quality of nourishment, you know, the sound as a carrying tool for intention, but also the sound itself as a way to access our vagus nerve and create and calibrate some coherence within the body and regulation within the nervous system. So sometimes we're carrying so much information or past conversations, we might be all over the place, our body, and we're just allowing these few moments for the sound of our voice to be an opportunity and a bridge and a pathway to regulating our nervous system. So just taking a few hums, and while you're humming, we're going to be humming, we're also going to be just gently squeezing our arms, gently squeezing our body, and gently squeezing our legs and our core. So taking a deep breath in, gentle squeeze of the arms, and humming to that body. Even bringing the hands down to the legs, giving gentle squeezes, and allowing again that sound of the voice. Not that we're performing or thinking about how we sound, if we're sounding good, but really relaxing into, gosh, what's a sensation like to allow a gentle hum through my cells, to let the sound of my voice as a vibration connect to the cells of my body, the tissues of my flesh, the bones, while I'm gently bringing these squeezes to my body, taking that deep breath in. Just one more gentle hum, and we're going to just think really with our intention, how good can this feel? How gentle can this feel? The vibration of my voice carrying through this precious instrument. How much of myself can I allow to occupy this body through this gentle hum, nourishing gentle hum? How good can it feel? Taking that deep breath in. Just taking a moment to notice the difference that a few squeezes and some deeper breaths and a few gentle hums can do to bring some calmness to the system and more presence to the room. And just taking one more deep breath in and shaking it out. And for those of us, I imagine, on the Sacred Sister podcast, it's a lot of ladies listening. And so just as we're shaking our hips, just feeling the ears at our hips, listening to the space in our sacrum, in our womb. What are we listening for today? How attuned can we be to the listening of these deeper parts of our embodiment, of our womb, of our sacrum, of our yoni, of this whole sacral gathering space, this place of chi generation and transformation, creativity, just bringing that looseness, listening, curiosity to this conversation.
So beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I love how you were just guiding us through this, and your gentle voice and your depth in the words that you speak, everything's so intentional. And that's what I love about your music too. And one of the pieces when you were just saying, you know, really listening to the voice of your womb and the voice in your body, you have something coming up that is called the voice of the womb, which we're going to be talking about in just a little bit. But I wanted to share a little story about it. When I was pregnant with my baby boy, and I have a daughter, she's 5, and my boy is now about to be 1 year old. So this was a little less than a year ago. I was pregnant with him, and I really tuned into this like spiral way of moving in my body. And I would come out from like a big spiral, and I would go smaller and smaller with the spiral. And I would listening in my mind, I would feel into your song, listening to the voice of your womb. And I even made a reel out of it with your song in the background playing. Nice. And then when you get to the center of the spiral, I was like, that's when I asked the question, or no, I ask the question when I started, and then I go to like spiral with my body to the center and just breathe and forget about it, just like feeling into my body. And then when I get to the center, I have the answer.
Nice. Nice.
And so I went, my question was, when is my baby boy going to be born? And so I spiraled all the way and I breathed and everything. And then I get into the center, and then the voice said, tomorrow.
Wow.
And then I posted it. And then the next day he was born.
Oh my gosh. What a cool story. And what a cool way to, what a cool exercise to the, your body's natural guidance into the center like that, and to ask that intuitive question. And then the body just providing that guidance and that answer. It's so simple, but so profound when with that, that quality of listening and welcoming of those parts that just know, you know, or just have so much wisdom, especially in that state at the gates. You're just right there. You're all body at that point. Ooh. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that story. I love hearing that anecdote and that, yeah, the way that that song carried you into that place.
Yeah, that's what your songs do. You're amazing. Like there's, you know, this whole album lineage, I think I've probably listened to 100, 200 times. I don't even know each one of the songs. And nice. Even Britt and I, we were listening to it when we went drive up to Spirit Weavers. Mm-hmm. And I'm literally sharing it with everyone that I know. So, yeah, I want to really know, like being such a beautiful priestess that you are, what is your story? Where have you come from? I know that you just told us that you were born in Arizona, in Phoenix, Arizona. Like, who was little Marja, and how did you come to be who you are now?
Well, little Marja was just so wonderful, but she was pretty scared. You know, she was scared and lonely and very creative and longing for a kind of connection. And that was challenging to find, I think, just in the circumstances. But she was very passionate, and the passion always rode on music and creativity and imagination and play. Mm. So that part has always been very strong, but it's always been very serious too. I've been very serious about play. And I was fortunate as a young person to get to really be nourished in my creativity by my parents. They really made a lot of space. My mom especially saw that and found a school for me to study in the arts in grades 7 through 12, Arizona School for the Arts, where I got to really devote daily to music and singing and theater. And that was really wonderful as a young person to get to have that environment to nourish the soul. And so music was always kind of it for me. It was the place where I was having these really deep state experiences where there was connection beyond construct, connection beyond identity, connection beyond the stage of development that I was at, to something that felt infinite, that felt home. It was home in music with the divine. And so following that just was an naturally unfolded my path, because I did go to Chapman University. I went there on a music scholarship to study voice, but my first semester there, I heard about this introduction to music therapy class, and the woman teaching that class was a doula. She was a music doula at birth and death. So she was sitting with people at the gates into and out of this realm with music as a bridge of support. And I felt that that was so beautiful, you know, when I learned about that and took that class and learned about how music could be a part of these really significant experiences in people's lives. And at 18 years old, I was like, that's it. This is what I'm here on the planet to do with sound and with my voice. And studying music therapy was a profound experience and gift, and learning about different facilitation methods around that. But it was, I wanted more. There was deeper to go. I was starting to study sound healing, and kind of the esoteric realms were opening their arms to me. And that wasn't so much available in a university setting at that time. And so I had just graduated. I told you girls, you're all in Vegas. I did my internship out there for music therapy, but I was connecting with a beloved who is studying energetic medicine and Qigong and Taoist alchemy and Buddhism and like all of that, the esoteric energetic arts were very enlivening to me. And so I moved to Santa Cruz to study them deeper. And so I've been since then kind of on this other path of learning about alternative medicine and Eastern spirituality that really take into account these other layers of being and consciousness and psyche. And then as I've continued to evolve and like how to apply that to this music therapy game, then really just studying about relationships, because at the end of the day, it all started coming down to energetic medicine was looking at like, where have there been challenges in relationships and how is that manifesting in the body, you know? And like, that was very powerful for me too. It's like, oh wow. I mean, there were physical traumas that would happen. Like, oh, that was happening. But it was so much of like, oh, there's this delicate balance that people are looking for in the elements of their body. And if something happens in relationship, that can really disrupt the balance. And so I became really fascinated with relationship and how people develop and have continued to study about that. And meanwhile, all of that was sitting inside of this like ongoing exploration of myself as a woman, as in, and my passions around romance and love and the muse and divinity and the mystical realms. And like, how does this all start to sense make? Some different mentors came into my life that were really helping me land inside of looking at the womb and exploring sacred sexuality and also the rites of passage work. And one of my, you know, best friends and mentors, Laura Rainbow Jaguar, she really came online in my life as a, you know, 24 and really started to support me learning about those doors. And then that path of understanding the womb and menstruation and the blood and the birth gates. And I feel like that original seed that I had with my music therapy teacher to look at the life gates and the death gates and then all the different rites of passage gates in between. And so then I feel like that's when it started to really cohere for me what I've been continuing to do and explore through music and through teaching and sharing and space holding. So that's a little bit about my journey.
Magical. What a beautiful embodiment you are, my dear. Yeah, you know, even looking at your beautiful background here, I feel like it's just painted and woven throughout. You can hear it in your songs, and I just love seeing it depicted here. This Scorpio rising, you are like the epitome. The epitome, like witch, priestess, and you offer this perspective so naturally, so organically. And then seeing on the opposite end, the North Node in Taurus, and just like, oh, that depth, that richness, that quality of artistry that with your song weaving, you literally take us into these birth and death gates, these mystical portals. And I feel like the way that you weave your lyrics, you take us all into trans spaces and help us to feel into what this mystical realm essence is. At least that's what it is for me.
Awesome. I love that. And I love that you're seeing that in the chart, and that North Node in Taurus, you know, is getting a huge activation for all you astro buffs. I've got Uranus right on my North Node right now. This year is the year of Uranus transiting my North Node, which I did some research recently that it was like whenever there's a nodal return, because I'm also having nodal return this year while Uranus is there, it's kind of like letting the Scorpio past be in the past, or like letting some of that, those things kind of rest and letting the, like the North really flourish. And that's been a big juicy exploration lately of like, oh, what is it to let some of the Scorpio pieces rest? And what does that mean for me? Knowing that it's a reservoir of resource to draw from, but that maybe some of the challenged, dark, like parts can just like let it go. And it's been really interesting. I feel for me, I used to be really like hunting the mysteries and the shadows. And I feel very kind of recently very liberated by that. I'm just being like, just taking things more at face value, just like not being so such a little like shadow sleuth as much, like that can come, that can be there if required, but there's something about the Taurus, just like the pleasure. It's like, just enjoy the Venusian textures of aliveness right here, right now. Like don't worry too much about the dark shadow side of the past. Like, okay, that's fine. Yeah. I spent some time there. I feel like I got some like good muscle reps in those territories, and they can come in if they need to, but we're hanging out with Taurus right now.
Beautiful. And it makes sense too with your God's finger pointing at Venus.
Yeah.
With Pluto and Neptune on the other side, and God's finger usually is like literally goddess, or it's, you know, telling us like this is this lifetime where you really want to focus on this part in your chart, and you have two God's fingers. No,
actually,
three.
Yeah,
I have four fingers of God. If you count, I think if you count Chiron, I don't know if you guys have Chiron put in.
Got it. If you count Chiron too, Chiron conjunct Venus,
or Chiron. I feel like there was another one. Anyway, I have four fingers of God in my chart.
Wow,
which is kind of crazy.
Kind of crazy. Yeah.
It's like three pointers. It's like, okay, we're pointing at Venus, we're pointing at Pluto, we're pointing at your Sun and Mars. So here are the pieces for you to really tune into these. And for anyone who is also interested, Maria is a Cancer Sun conjunct Mars in the ninth house and an Aries Moon in the fifth house, which I love so much when you were talking about how your inner child was so playful and imagination just came so natural and you wanted to have more of that. Yeah, almost like that Aries, let me just experience life and go out into the world and feel and have more of that fire.
Yeah.
Playful fire.
Yeah, initiating, starting new,
and ambitious at the same time, you know, like I need to, I want it now. Yeah, it's beautiful. I loved how you were just talking about all these rites of passages, you know, with birth and death. And do you want to share with our audience a little bit more who are not, for those of us who are not too in tune with the different rites of passages, what else are considered rites of passages? What are we moving through from the moment that we're born to the moment that we're crossing over?
I'd love to share a little bit. Well, the understanding that I'm looking at is that throughout our life, we have these significant chapters where we're learning and lessening, and we have like, I'm going to call like identity shells, and that at certain stages, our identity shells will go through a massive transformation based on hormone changes, based on just developmental stages and growth. And I consider those rites of passage, and some rites of passage happen for everyone at the same, like at generally the same time. We can look at like astrological kind of passage rites of passage, like Saturn return or the nodal return or Uranus opposition or Pluto square. Some of these are generational rites of passage. And you can kind of line some of those rites of passage up with hormonal changes, like, but you know, different kinds of things that come online or get let go of. So one of the main rites of passage, as we have remember, is puberty. That is a huge rite of passage that everyone goes through. And for those of us with womb, we go through it in this very specific way where we actually start to drop blood. And now we're transitioning from a person who is exploring a body that is, you know, more in this phase of life that is in the child view, learning, growing, exploring, creating, to now we have dropped blood and we're in on this cyclical mystical clock hormonally where we're in this pull of attraction and expansion and contraction and pheromonally attracted to potential mates. We could become pregnant. There's a whole sexual piece that comes online and the responsibility that ripens us into as young people. and the transition that we go through to really alchemize and stabilize in some of those hormonal changes. So that's a major rite of passage. But even before then, there's all of these mini rites of passage. The first time a child goes to school, you know, and a first time a child is without their primary caregivers, aren't there with them all day. These are other kinds of smaller rites of passage, or they say that sometimes was as a 7-year-old child, that in some traditions they say that it takes 7 years for the soul of a child to fully incarnate into the body. And so that at age 7, that's when there's this whole rite of passage of individuation from the parent begins. Like that before then, there's more of this like we kind of like field, or there's this more internal like receptive sponge-like nature, but then there's like whole other kind of critical thinking comes online as a 7-year-old. That's when there's the first Saturn square. So there's a little bit of like, oh, I'm the first 7 years of my life are done, and this whole other consciousness comes online. And so in some traditions, they'll do a rite of passage as a 7-year-old where a child can actually like cut the astral umbilicus cord and say, hey, I'm actually not in this gestational externalized umbilicus experience with a mom. We actually need to close that chapter so that I can start to be an individual separate from the energy field of my mom and my parents, but still held and guided by them. And so that's a big rite of passage that I think gets skipped, and not a lot of people. I love to bring attention to that one because it was so powerful to learn for me as an adult, being like, oh, wow, what would my experience have been like as a 7-year-old had there been a real coming of age, rite of passage, witness in the community in that way. What would it have been like for me as a 12-year-old when my blood dropped to have to go and get, you know, a new red dress or something, like anything to mark the passage of time and get to look and reflect on who was I before, who am I no longer because this new experience is online, who do I get to become, and mark that with sacredness so that there's this bead and this threshold that gets deliberately walked through with presence, awareness, with love, with care, attention. And how does that set me up? And how does that set young people up for more embodied success, more self-knowledge, more confidence, more ability to know themselves in a deliberate way? So those are some of the rites of passage. And then there's so many more: birthing, giving birth, having sex for the first time, you know, having sex deliberately for the first time, you know, stopping blood, buying your first house. There's all these other cultural rites of passage that happen, and losses too, you know, like losses of pregnancy, losses of relationship. Those are all different kinds of rites of passage as well. So finding that what I really love about the work of tracking the song of a life and really finding these major thresholds that people go through and bringing a lot of, like, putting a womb around those moments in time so that it can be integrated, understood, celebrated, transformed, and then people can walk through those rites of passage with core vital strength, and then it becomes part of this wisdom gathering as they walk through their lives.
It's a perfect depiction of your sun in Cancer conjunct Mars, like creating this womb around it so people have walked through it with confidence. I love it. Yes.
And in the ninth house of transformation too, right? Ruled by Sagittarius. Nice. It's like this total exuding of the truths that are I associate a lot of Sagittarius energy with the mystical aspects of life too, and just how much we are constantly transforming. How many initiation processes are we walking through at any one time? It's like, just gives so much depth and richness to life when we really like zoom out and are able to really inquire about what cycles of initiation we ourselves are finding ourselves on, and the sisters around us, deepening dialogues in these ways. And for me, it just adds such a beautiful depth of richness to human existence.
Yeah, and I feel like it adds, in addition to this depth and richness, like a lot of compassion also for what people are going through in the middle of some of these, their transformational rites of passage. You're like, oh, wow. It becomes more than like, wow, so-and-so's having a shit day or like whatever. It's like, oh no, they're in a crucible of, they're on time for their soul's divine transformational process. And for the next 3 years or 2.5 years, this part of it's going to be really hard. They're in an alchemy. They're in a deep alchemy. And so how can we hold that alchemy with more presence so that there's just more space around the parts that are all coming to be heard and to be mourned and to be loved and to be woven back and to be released. It can be lonely if we're doing that without context, but I feel like going in ceremonial context and rites of passage context creates just so much, it's safety and warmth and again, a presence around an alchemical process. So it can be not necessarily less painful, but more easily to assimilate, more easily to digest, but we're able to draw the full nourishment from the experiences that we're having in a life rather than walking through a life like half dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it gives us deeper meaning, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like as soon as we have a meaning for why certain things are happening and why certain challenges are here for us to move through, it makes it so much, well, easier is maybe not the right word, but yeah, it's like more easeful in the way that we move through it because we know this is my rites of passage right now. It's like the shift in perspective instead of thinking shit's going down. What's happening with me? Something's wrong.
Right. Something's wrong with me. What have I done? It's just like, oh no, like the season, the wheel is turning. The astrological elements are infusing the field with potential energy and we get to interact and with those energies and discover ourselves in deeper ways and get to the edges of our identity shells that might be cracking open to reveal more of who we are in our unfolding.
Exactly. I witness it as like this fighting against the current or allowing ourselves to take a really deep breath and just totally surrender and let ourselves go underwater because we know that we, a part of us, at least, no matter how much our conscious mind is attempting to refuse and refute the current reality, right? It's like taking a big gulp of air, trusting that you're going to come back up before you die or letting yourself die and knowing that that's a part of the process as well. And yeah, just surrendering, trusting, having faith that it's all happening for something that even if it doesn't make sense to you just now, trusting that it will one day.
Yeah. And I think that there's something really beautiful again, when there's collectives of humans who are applying the wisdom of cyclical knowledge and rites of passage in a deliberate way, then there's more wisdom to be accessed in the collective because it's like, oh, someone's going through it. And there's more people being like, oh, I went through this rite of passage. This is what it was like for me. These are the character strengths I was able to find in myself. This is who I thought I was that I really had to question and let go of. Mm-hmm. And when we do rites of passage work, there's more of those harvests that are happening. And so there's just more soul that gets to be online in the play.
So when you say you do the rites of passage work, is that something that you offer or is that something that you do within your own community?
So with rites of passage work, the way that I like to hold it, I go through my own experiences with my personal community. And then I teach a course, which we can just drop a little bit about. I have a 9-month container that I hold called The Voice of My Womb, Rose Petal Path. And that is a space for women to come and get a deep kind of understanding of the rites of passage that happen in a woman's life. And what we do in that course is we go through over 9 months, the different rites of passage and interact with them, but we're looking at it all through the lens of creative process. Who am I as a vessel of creativity? What is my relationship with my voice, my song, my sound in the world? And how can embracing rites of passage and maybe retroactively taking myself through rites of passage that may have been skipped or preparing or hearing other people's own stories fill out some of the gaps that I might have had, start to bring more of myself online so that I can give my gift fully to the world. So we do that in this 9-month immersion where we look at vocal alchemy, we look at the voice womb connection, we will go deep into the womb gates and the gates that women go through with the blood. We go into child development and psyche and story, and we get into songwriting as the bridge to weave it all together, that a lot of that, you know, there's song inside of us, that we have a song to sing in this world, that when we engage with the creative process, we can actually integrate so much of our psyche material. And so we get to use songwriting as a devotional practice and a practice of play and creativity to meet ourselves, to encounter these parts of our identity, our psyche, our growth, to mark these passages of time in song, and then to come out through this 9-month journey with potentially a whole bundles of song that tell the story of who we're becoming in the world as women.
Wow.
Sheesh.
Powerful.
And when does this begin?
So we have this next cohort begins in October, October 18th. It's on Tuesdays Pacific time from 6 to 7:30. And we'll meet 3 times a month until through the summer, throughout the year, through the summer. And I'll have a free workshop call, an introductory call, on September 20th. So I think we're going to release this next week. And so it'll happen, a couple days after this podcast goes live. You can come to the free call, get a little taste of what that workshop's like, what the class would be like. And then if you're just really interested in learning more, you can come apply for Voice of My Womb now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sacred being.
Yeah.
Who's feeling the call? Yeah. We're also going to go ahead and put the link in the description of this episode for any and all who are feeling that sacred tingle happening inside of them right now.
I found it to be so helpful as an artist to have these kinds of creative containers where it's really a period of time where I get to interact with my identity as an artist, my calling as a creator, and to have it be woven with the women's mysteries and with these rhythms, and really landing inside of the wisdom and the blessing of the moon cycle and stages of transition out of bleeding. Like, there's just something so potent and powerful inside of this kind of container. As a participant, I've done several of them, and the transformation I've gone through as an artist going through those experiences has been phenomenal and so empowering. And so it's such a delight to get to offer in that way as well. I feel like it's definitely my devotional path inside of the ministry to get to weave, again, the energetic science and medicine and music therapy with these really powerful experiences of a human life and the song of life. And I've seen so many women come through this and just like get this experience of depth. Maybe they come in because they want to work on their opening their voice, or work through vocal trauma, or work on becoming a better songwriter, and know they want to work on songs for an album. Or even women, they're like, I don't care what we're doing, I just want to get into the place where I get to practice and learn about the womb and play with song, but I'm not even trying to be a songwriter. There's so many various walks of life that women come in through that door. But at the end of the day, there's so much richness that happens in integrating all of that. And it's been really fun to see the women who come through just be out in the world living so much more fully and more aliveness, and songs coming through and just more visibility and willingness and availability to share their gifts because of the pieces that get to integrate inside of the journey that we go through.
Mm, yes. And I saw on your website too, that you're offering these songs for mothers to co-create a song for their babies.
Yeah. So if there's any pregnant mamas on the call, that is something one of my art collaborators, longtime collaborators, Tessa Shields, we are connecting with families that are expecting, and we're writing a birth song with you connected to the knowledge of the conception, the intention, the dreams. We're going to guide a special ceremony to connect with the spirit of the child, write a song from what comes through that ceremony. And then once the baby is born, make a portrait of the baby that also connects to the song. So it's a really special ceremonial, creative. We like to consider ourselves like the art spirit doulas, like on the outer edge of the birth team, that we come in with this wave where we create this light lattice through sound and art that supports the soul coming through and supports the mama and the family to drop into, to create a time capsule of this story of what's happening with the birth.
I think that is so beautiful. Like, imagine having a song about your conception and birth story and like the meaning behind your name. And oh my gosh, I'm even thinking of like doing this, like, you know, retro for both of my children.
Yeah.
And just, you know, telling their birth story through song.
Yeah.
Like, how totally. Special is it? I know that you, Britt, your mom always told you your birth story every birthday. And
every
I find
birthday.
That so beautiful. That's such a beautiful tradition. Mm-hmm. Now imagine that being a song that you can sing and, oh my gosh.
And grow with, too. That's beautiful. Yeah, wow. What a phenomenal offering. I've never heard of this. You know, I just similarly, I mean, not similarly at all, but in the more mundane sense, just recently I started seeing this company that does these songs for your partner, for your parents, whoever you want, that they'll compose a song in it. Nice. Kind of weaves these personal stories that you share. And then the videos are like, the people play the song for the people in the car and they're like, do, do, do. And then they like notice they say something about like, we met at college on the 13th of May or whatever. and the people are like, oh, and they look at the people, they're like, is this about us? Oh my God.
Oh, it's so special. Yeah. You know, the power of music. Cute. People are so cute. people are so cute.
Yeah. You know what I wanted to touch on that you did at the very beginning of this during your medicine piece that I feel like is so helpful. And I can feel that this is a specific piece of magic that you are here to help people really reclaim and neutralize. You already used the word calibrate within yourself. Mm-hmm. It's like through offering the embodied hums, it helps so many people to acknowledge the fact that each and every one of us have a unique vibration that's emanating within us. Mm-hmm. So much of the time we put on this pedestal what our voice is, what it's not, what it should be, what it shouldn't be, who can sing, who can't sing. And it's so powerful to truly create awareness over and neutralize a lot of those illusions that we have been passed down generally from a lot of other people and have, you know, started to judge ourselves over. But it's so powerful to really gain awareness over those illusions and then question those illusions and be like, well, why am I hanging on to this so fiercely? Do I have a sound? Hey, Kaso, you have a sound, my
he
love.
Has a sound.
You have a loud sound.
Yes! Keep hearing it.
But I think that that's really, really special. And I'm just really, really happy that you're saying yes to your path in this way, to put it simply.
Yeah, I mean, like what you said, the way I like to say that is like, oh, when we become aware of our mind, we become aware of our narratives or our constructs or the stories, or that construct awareness is such a powerful pivoting moment, I think, for people to take a real leap to learn how to have a little bit of space between where they're moving in the world from. And I think having that breath of reactivity, our animal bodies are so powerful and precious, and there's some real nourishment to give to all the parts of us, that intuitive gut level wisdom. And yet sometimes, because of experiences that we may have had, hard experiences, we may develop hypervigilance or neurology that gets wired in a specific way where we're always then in hypervigilance and reacting to stimulus that may or may not be stimulus that is the same kind of threat that we originally developed those responses around. And so we might be living in some kind of like spin or loop or repetitive loop. And I find that, and again, it's nervous system dysregulation. It's all just there to attempt to protect us, to not have that harm again. There's something really powerful about the voice as a tool for specifically communicating with that part of our nervous system to bring regulation and calmness, to be able to ask deliberately, what happened? What's the story I'm telling myself? What other information is available that I couldn't see because I'm hyper attuned to specific information that repeats the story that was painful. And that sound can do that and bring us into a state where we actually have access to more of our intelligence. We can turn on our frontal cortex that may have gone offline because we got into a triggered or trauma state. And now we're moving from this like more primordial part of ourselves and be like, oh wait, what happens when I bring on this like heart quality that can track social cues differently, or I can actually bring on my frontal cortex that can think compassionately and logically and assess beyond instinctual repelling. And not that that instinctual repelling is a bad thing. That's a very helpful and useful instinct. And so how do we actually nourish the intelligences of all of those parts of us from a place of deliberate presence and self-compassion? And I find that the more I get to do that, the more I get to have agency in my life, and the more I get to create from a place, a reservoir of coherence and trust with life, while also getting to heal and work with those little parts that are growing up, that are reintegrating, and actually learn to trust the gut instincts and the signals even more deeply. Because when they're coming up, I'm like, oh, I know I've worked on some of the trauma patterning enough to know that this instinct is really, I should really listen to this one. Mm-hmm.
So powerful, this work. And while you were talking, I was like, yeah, of course. This is part of your career and like focal point in your life with your Mercury in Leo conjunct your midheaven, literally Mercury that voice, the communication, beliefs, like it's literally opposite your Jupiter in Aquarius. In the fourth house, we see like, you know, finding those beliefs inside of us that are holding back to us to really open up our voice and speaking our truths and allowing song to come through depending on whatever passage we're moving through in life. And it's part of your grand square that you have together with your north node and south node. So usually when we have these grand squares in our chart, there is some sort of, it's kind of like a harder challenge that we have to move through. But when we move through it personally, then we become this powerhouse to like really stand there in the world for others to help them through that transformative process.
Awesome. Nice.
Absolutely. Yeah, I see that mercurial piece too as it's like the witnesser, the awareness gainer of the networks, the systems inside of ourselves too.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Fun.
Fun.
So would you say, Maria, was there a part when you were saying that you felt kind of shy as a little girl, when was the part for you where you said, you stepped into it fully and you made the choice to like really go for this, to make this your main profession and this is your life direction?
I got thrust by life into it. I think it's been a progression because it's always been there, and then there's been stages of more. So when I was eight, like when I was a kid, all I did was music. So, and then there was more. And then when I was 18, oh, got music therapy. Cool. This is it. And then there was more. And then there still becomes more and more. I feel like because I'd practiced as a music therapist for a decade, there was a version I was like, oh, cool, I'm exercising this stage of it. But I was building a body of knowledge and experience that then I outgrew this version of it. And then it became this, you know, women's work that all started kind of in 2017, where I was like, okay, I'm done work. I'm retiring as a music therapist and I'm expanding into this other kind of evolution of that identity. And still all the same skills are being applied, but it was just where I wanted to work with women and I wanted to work with adult development. So I feel like that happened for me when I had enough life experience to be able to have self-reflection on my own development. And then it continues to be that path, because that's all I study now. It's just like I dealt like the development, what happens, what are we learning, and so I, you know, I imagine I'll be riding this wave for a while, but I have no idea what 5 years down the line is going to bring, and if there's going to be an evolving from this sort of place that I've been hanging out into the next phase. I can't see ahead yet, but I hope so. I hope I get to keep growing and evolving the work, and that it gets to keep evolving me. But ultimately, at the center of everything, it feels like this core relationship with the divine that has expressed itself in my life through creativity and music and sound, and then finding ways to get to share that with others. And so I feel like that will never change. I'll just find new stories to tell and new kind of rooms in the Temple of the Muse to decorate.
Give me all the descriptive. It's like anytime you freaking say anything, I just see these like illustrations of mystical symbolism just weaving themselves through my inner landscape.
That's cool. That's what I like. I like the, yeah, that's, I feel one of the ways I like to play decorating the mind in a moment with this creative wordplay.
Totally. And you know what? I want to touch on this too. I have this tab up because I was like, oh, I was listening to this song this morning. I was listening to Blood of the Stone on the Sapphire album.
Nice.
And it's so fun to follow the wordplay that you use, because it's like initially some verse will, or not even a verse, but a section of a verse will get me. And then you just take me deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I'm like, oh, and then it's like a freaking orgasm at the end of every verse. So I want to read this, if that's okay, this verse.
Please.
So it says, and I invite everyone, if you're not driving a car right now, I invite you to close your eyes. Even take a really deep breath in. Shatter me into mythic wakefulness, that I might drink the full chalice of wisdom in this single moment of full source reunion, in a desert kiss, cleansing our history, blood of the stone, iron streams that are leading us home, ancient bliss in a smell of waters to come, purifying all that was lost to this land. It just tells so many different stories in such a small bit of words. So beautiful.
Thank you. I was telling you, ladies, I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, which was pretty unforgiving most of the time, except at the end of the summer when monsoon season would come. And there was just this eruption of electricity and wind and hot air and smell, and the petrichor would come, the smell of rain on dust, the blood of the stone. And I was so infatuated with that smell in that moment. When I moved away from the desert, it was the thing I missed the most. What are these crazy electric storms and the huge dust cloud that would come and descend upon the city. And it was very terrifying, but it was like so exciting. And there's nothing like a desert storm in monsoon season. And so having been years away from that, I missed it. I missed it. I felt it. And I did research on it one day. I always felt, I was like, I want to write a song that captures this perfection of that experience. And having gone through some experiences in the blood, and thinking about the blood of the stone, and just finding the overlapping metaphors and stories within what happens, like the blood of the stone comes and the smell is so ecstatic and euphoric. And one of the theories is that we are wired to smell rain and smell the oils that come and feel bliss, because it means to our system that the waters are coming and the gardens will grow and there will be food for the next season. So there's this vitality that comes online on us, knowing that the fertility is coming, you know? And so there is something really beautiful about like what the desert of the soul. And we're just like, fuck, I don't know if life's worth living. It's kind of weird. And then that, like the rains of grief come, and we're able to feel alive again. And we know that there's more to come, even after we've had a harrowing desert rainless experience for however long.
I love that so much. And I love how you use these very natural mundane things that are happening to us and make them magical and see the sacred in them, the sacredness. And that brings us back to connecting to nature, connecting to source, because we grew up, like our ancestors knew how to see that as sacredness. And I want to touch on another piece too. You call yourself a bard, which I love so much. Do you want to share a little bit about how you see yourself as a bard?
Well, my understanding of the bard, and it felt like a natural title to take on, was that the bards were the weavers of the stories between the villages. And so the bard would go from one village to the next, carrying the songs and connecting them, carrying the news, carrying the medicine, trade. And it was this, like, this joyful weaver between the worlds of the places and traveling through. And I felt, and the keeper of the old songs and the keepers of the old stories and the writers of the new stories. And so that was their whole life. And so the bard, again, it's more of like a mystic musical person. And that felt connected. I was like, oh, I definitely have these. I love that place. It was like a word that made space for all of the things that I feel called to in this life. And I definitely met a couple of bards. One of my bard muse friends, Travis, who's an incredible singer-songwriter. His music's under Balladeer. And he and I have a project called Stark Levity together. And he was this like just true bard. And I feel like he initiated me into the use of that word and the understanding of the power of song to really weave the old, like this old world way of song carrying. And so he brought that word into my life and that insight.
I love that. And speaking of weaving the songs from land to land and sharing the good news, I loved seeing that you are opening for Ayla's fall tour, Ayla Nerio's.
Yeah, Ayla Nerio. We are going on tour with our sister Tina Malia, who's amazing. And Tina's going to be joining as a special guest for this tour. I'll be opening and we're starting tour West Coast dates. We have a bunch of dates. We're headed into California and Oregon and Washington. So all of the dates are on Ayla's website, and starting I think September 29th, we're going into it in a few weeks. Yeah.
I will be, I don't know which show I'll be going to, but I will be traveling down to Southern California to go to the show. Hannah, it would be really fun to take a road trip.
Yay. So
fun. Yes. We got to get it going.
There was another show, and I mentioned this because I know that you did a song with Shyla Ray, right? Shyla Ray is...
I haven't worked with Shyla, actually, but I love her. She's a homegirl, but I don't think we've collaborated on a song yet. She's collaborated with my brother, Robbie, who I've collaborated with.
I'm thinking of someone else then, because there was and I swear this person was one of the openers for
Elijah Ray.
Elijah Ray. Yes, yes. The other Ray. And I just saw Shyla Ray and got tuned into her music a couple months ago. She performed out here.
Yeah.
But Elijah Ray. So Ayla was performing in San Diego on my dad's birthday a couple years ago. And my mom had just passed away. And I packed my dad up in the car. I was like, come on, we're going to go to San Diego for your birthday. First birthday without mom. And Ayla was performing in San Diego. And I went there. And Elijah Ray was opening. And my dad was just crying listening to this music. And I just feel like all of it's woven together. I was so, so excited to see that you'll be opening for Ayla this tour. So everyone, get your traveling boots on, get your oil changed. This is going to be such an epic show, I feel.
It's going to be really sweet. And bless up Elijah Ray, who's a dear friend and brother and muse companion. And he and I actually, we have a whole course called Vocal Core Resonance that's online, that's just focused on the voice and the power of sound. And we did that for a few years, and more to come from the Vocal Core Resonance crew. But I consider Elijah one of my favorite artists and one of my voice teachers, and just an incredible soul. So definitely check out his stuff online as well. The Soundlight stuff is especially precious and wonderful.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be linking all of your website down below as well, and the links to the tickets as well for the concert.
Yeah, awesome. And Voice of My Womb, calling in the ladies to come join me on this 9-month muse devotion and immersion into vessel, tending creativity, tending the voice, tending the song that wants to move through you in the world. It's going to be really, really powerful and precious, and I can't wait to meet the cohort that's gathering for this 9-month journey.
Absolutely. You know, we extended a piece to our audiences. Hannah, I don't know if you want to grab your phone right now, but we thought it would be a really fun thing to extend to our audience, the Sacred Sister podcast audience, and then both of ours personally, just to see what questions people have for you. Oh, nice. And I got a couple really, really beautiful ones. So Hannah, I wanted to see if you had some that you really want to highlight too. And I said online that it would just be one question that we are going to feature, but who knows? Time. Maybe we'll do two. We'll get crazy.
Oh, do it. Let's go crazy with the questions.
Let's go crazy with the questions. So I want to first ask you, this is from our dear sister, Sage.
Hi, Sage.
Hi, Sage. And Sage asked, have you ever considered writing a book or books? Your storytelling is so inspiring, she says.
Oh, I have considered writing a book, and there is a story that is gestating. Yeah, it hasn't popped through yet, but I imagine that this lifetime is one where books will pop through. Maybe in the next couple of years, maybe in a decade. Who knows exactly when? But yes, I have considered it and have been wondering as well.
It's in the womb.
Yeah, it's in the seed bank, what conditions are needed in order for a book to come through, that a story that I really want to tell.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Did you have a question you want to ask, or can I go to another one?
You go ahead.
Beautiful. So Julie, who's Medicinal Movement Healing, that's the handle. Julie was asking, what do you feel are some of the most inspirational parts within your own spiritual journey?
Ah, what has inspired me on my spiritual journey? I'm really inspired by currently how learning tools for pivoting out of self-deception, creating habits of noticing when my mind is spiraling into self-delusion, confusion, complexity, and pulling me out of the moment of being with my life in a way of openness. And so I find that the most inspiring things right now to me are things that really are very simple, that can just again help me keep coming back to an orientation of openness and wonder. And so anything that can help me cultivate wonder and continue to reinforce and uplift the parts of me that want to stabilize and wonder as a great place to move into or return to. So what does that for me? Really good art, really good music. Water usually does it for me. Waterfalls do it for me for sure. And so, yeah, because there's all of this extremely powerful, I could have really powerful state experiences that are oh, that was the most magical and inspiring. And there's something that happened, it's really fun when oh, my spiritual journey, I've had those moments of whoa, euphoria. And all the winds are in the central channel and I'm a fountain of glowing. And I love those moments, don't get me wrong. Those are cool experiences. But right now I find that my deepest inspiration is what's just going to help my mind settle down from all of the yada yada so that I can come back to a resting state of wonder and openness and love.
More of that Taurus energy we were talking about.
Yeah, just gentle, simple.
Oh my gosh. I have a Gemini stellium. So trust me, I know like freaking endless yada yada sometimes is hard to escape.
Yeah. But you know, but like experiences of big awe do that. And so it's kind of a balance of like, well, how can I like be someone who will choose to deliberately create experiences that I know are going to be optimized that sense of wonder and awe without getting too attached to that as and clinging and chasing that. And it's fun. It's like a fun thing that I'm learning about right now.
Mm-hmm. So beautiful. Oh my gosh. Maria, this interview, this conversation, this deepened dialogue has been so insightful and wise and illuminating. I feel like we could stay here all day, likely.
Definitely. We can keep traversing these waters and finding more depths. So it's really been wonderful to be with you, Hannah and Britt. Thank you so much for having me and inviting me onto this wonderful platform and just connecting to all of the beautiful listeners. Thank you again for taking your time to sit and be with us and hear my story and hear about these things that I find most precious.
Thank you so much. And before we're going to hop off, we are always asking our guests three sacred questions, and you can just comment on those in a short format.
Sure.
So the first one is, what does sacred mean to you?
Cherished.
Boom, just like that. Beautiful. Mm. And then who is a sacred sister to you, and what does it mean to have a sacred sister?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is my sister Tessa, who I mentioned before. And Tessa is just a long-term ally and friend. We've known each other almost 19 years and have really known each other through so many of the rites of passage and changes and transformations, and have created together for a long time. And so I name her as one of my core council of sacred wise women in my life. There's many that are really precious and tender to me. I feel really fortunate to have such a full roost of incredible women in my life to learn with and grow with. And the sacred sister is, yeah, that's someone to be in the unfolding of all of the parts of ourselves, and then and tracking, you know, tracking the evolving pieces that the dream is. So I feel it's like dream sharing, dream uplifting, and heart sanctuary.
I love the way that you just explained that. Beautiful. And last question, how do you make something normal or mundane into something magical or sacred?
I think just applying curiosity to it will really do it. It's like, it's just anything mundane, if you just look at it a little closer and ask a question, get curious. I feel like that's just a doorway to the muse. I feel like the muse is around us always. It's everywhere. And the mundane is pregnant with possibility of divination, of sacredness, of being the context and content through which we get to pop open all kinds of worlds. I don't, you know, that it's like, and I love thinking about doorways to muse, you know, the doorways to creative wonder. And I think, yeah, that's the simplest way to do it for me, is just wonder, bring wonder to it, bring wonder with it. Keep asking questions. Let the question lead to another question. It's like, you can ask one question, it can open a door to 1,000 questions. And then all of a sudden you're in territories of the asking mind, the asking, the open, the curious, the wondering. You know, you might start with like a water bottle and end up at the North Pole, you know?
That just reminds me of this exercise that you shared on your Instagram, where you go out in nature and you find a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you look and you find three faces. Mm-hmm. On that rock.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ask them a question, mm-hmm. each of the faces, and you listen to the response.
Mm. Yeah, it's a songwriting exercise that I like to do, or a journaling exercise, and just again applying that magical thinking, right? Like we can tune into magical thinking deliberately and with fun and wonder, and it can spark like almost like the Rorschach kind of like, what do you see? And it's just like, it doesn't matter what you see. It's just what the first answer, best answer, just let the imagination have something to interact with. Mm-hmm. And then it can open doors to, I think, those deeper parts of us, especially that rock experience. Like you're in the water, you're already kind of get to go into this trance state with the running water. It kind of like creates this vibe and you're like, oh, cool. I might be able to get access to deeper parts of my base mind or my unconscious story and let different parts of myself communicate because I'm listening to the softer voices.
What a different way of going on a walk when you think of it, like going to a river and be like, this is my subconscious and it's flowing through me and I'm going to take this rock and it's going to give me the oracle of the wisdom that I need to hear in this moment. It's so magical. Mm-hmm. It might be from like an outside standing perspective. They're like, what is she doing in the river?
Yeah, it's totally weird. Like what's this ordinary experience? But it's that thing that like ordinary experiences can transform into extraordinary moments like that.
Exactly. And I feel like that's what children do. So easily and naturally all the time, you know, they collect rocks and they look at rocks and listen to what the rock says. And then we just kind of forget about that childlike wonder as we move on and we live in this world. And I feel like now bringing that back that's the magic.
It makes me think of Bill Plotkin's amazing soulcraft work. He's a couple of great books where he's, you know, taking people on these nature walks and how do you have that extra attention when you're walking to have the extra listening, to open up your perception fields and really take in what's happening and let, again, other parts of yourself that might be, you know, armor, you know, because we're walking the world, we kind of have this street armor, we kind of have this personality show, oh, we're walking in the world. Then you get like, what does it take to just be like, oh, I'm going to relax some of the armor a little bit and let more of me come out and have a container to do that with, which might just be as simple as asking, well, slowing down, taking breath and asking a question.
Beautiful. What's that man called?
Bill Plotkin's.
Bill Plotkin.
Yeah, he has two books I love. One's called Wild Mind and the other one's called Soulcraft.
I feel like what you just described so beautifully speaks to what you said earlier in the episode about the whole nervous system reset. It's like jumping out of the instinctual reactivity that so many of us may not experience very often at all. And it's learning to really relax inside of that so that you can reveal these deeper facets of the self.
Definitely. Yeah.
Oh, so beautiful. Marja, thank you so much for joining us today. And for every single sacred being who's here with us at the end of the episode, we thank you so, so, so much. Thank you for caring about these beautiful conversations. You are our sacred kin. Please go and follow Marja, connect with her more deeply, her beautiful offerings, and we will see you in the next episode.
Awesome. Thank you, ladies, so much. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you. Namaste.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode today, beloved. If it resonated with you, we ask you to please share it with your sacred sisters, brothers, and beings alike. You have no idea the impact a simple share can make in someone's day, life, and growth.
And another way to show your love and support is by leaving us a rating or review on the app you're tuning into this from. And if you hang out on Instagram and your feed is in need of more uplifting and conscious spiritual content, follow us at Sacred Sister Podcast. So with that being said, we hope you have a wonderful day and we'll see you in the next episode.
Namaste, beloved. Bye.